Walter Payton passed away back in 1999, and finally, a really definitive book has been written about his life, not only in football, but out of football as well. And it's been written by the very respectable Jeff Perlman. The name of the book is called Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. It took him 2.5 years to write. He interviewed 700 people. And yet, Jeff, it got an awful vociferous response to the book, and some of it not really positive. Were you surprised by the response to your book?
I was. And people say, how could you be surprised? But I may just be dumb. But I, you know, it was. I put so much time and energy into this book, and I really view it as a sort of definitive, balanced, you know, all-encompassing biography of a man's life. And when the Sports Illustrated excerpt ran, I wasn't mad or anything. They have every right to run what they want, but they ran sort of a piece from after his career ended when he was going through a lot of tough times. I think people, and I really didn't see this coming, I think people took that excerpt to mean that the entire book was this, you know, I don't know, like scandal-plagued Walter Payton, you know, tell-all, Kitty Kelly, whatever. And you know, I put my life into that book. I really, to me, it's a definitive biography, not... If anything, I love Walter Payton more now, having written it, than I did before. So, yeah, I was a little hurt by it, and I hope people, if they give it a chance, will see what I'm saying.
How hard was it for you to write a balanced book? And what I mean by that is you even state, never have I forgotten my 30 minutes with Walter Payton. As a boy, I loved and admired Payton. I still do. I loved his style. I loved his approach. But yet, as you went through and finding out more about his life, you found about some things that were kind of disturbing, or probably the public would find disturbing. How hard was it then to have balance and to present both sides of him?
You know, it actually wasn't that hard, because I don't actually view, when I'm working on a book, I don't view things as negative versus positive. You know, we all have things we go through in our life. I mean, all of us, that were happier than other times, that were worse than other times. You know, we all... Sort of the hard times, in a lot of ways, are what's sort of, you know, I guess how we deal with the tough times is the ultimate character barometer. And so I never viewed, like, when he suffered through Great Depression after his playing career ended, and he was, you know, threatening to commit suicide to close friends, I didn't view that as, you know, so-called dirt or, you know, negative whatever on him. I viewed it as a very important time in his life, one that a lot of, you know, a phase that a lot of retired athletes go through when they're sort of wondering what their purpose is, you know, in their late 30s, no longer able to do what has made them famous, no longer having fans chanting their name, you know, sitting at, you know, in ballroom C of the Bethesda Holiday Inn, signing autographs next to the cast of Leave It to Beaver. You know, it's like a very hard, fierce come down that a lot of athletes go through. And I thought sort of that he went through it, that a guy is great and is respected and as admired as Walter Payton, that he went through the same feelings and the same problems. I didn't view it as a negative. I just viewed it as a very telling and important part of his life.
He was a guy that reached out to an awful lot of people. I mean, the common fan out there, you talk about it in the book, how he'd stop people on the streets in Chicago and ask them how their day was. I think he had that mantle of being a hero. And so when you have that kind of image of someone, anybody who writes anything that's not hero-wise is probably going to take some heat, are they not, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, though. You know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, Jane Levy wrote a great, great book, The Last Boy, about Mickey Mantle, and it dealt with his infidelity and his alcoholism. And, you know, I don't think he got crushed for it, and she got crushed for it. And Richard Ben Kramer wrote the legendary, you know, Joe DiMaggio biography, Hero's Life. I think there's something about Chicago's relationship with Walter Payton and the way he treated the fans and how good he was to them, that people are very, very protective of him. And I think when it came across early on that someone was trying to attack him, which I wasn't, but when that sort of image was presented, how dare this guy go after our Walter Payton? I think people felt sort of in the same way that Walter Payton seemed to be there for them, that they wanted to stand up for their hero now that he was gone. And I can appreciate that because he treated the fans of Chicago, you know, with an incredible amount of grace and class and, you know, and love.
As you know, most people have a background, and in his case, his goes back to the state of Mississippi. Tell me a little bit about how that formed Walter Payton, the man.
Well, he had a fascinating boyhood. He's from Columbia, Mississippi, and his junior year, midway through his junior year, he was at Jefferson High School, which is the all-black school in Columbia. Midway through his junior year, the Marion County Board of Ed finally just desegregated schools. They're only 14 years late on Brown versus the Board of Education. They finally decided to. And Walter Payton was on the boys basketball team at Columbia High School, the first integrated team in that county. And, you know, the first practice, it's very awkward. You have the black players, you have the white players, people feeling each other out. And, you know, Walter Payton was the kid who was busting on the white players, cracking on the black players, making fun of everyone, you know, sort of opening people up. He was that kind of guy. And then, you know, my favorite time is, you know, football, of course, in Mississippi is huge. And, you know, his senior year, it's the first sort of desegregated football team, integrated football team. And, you know, again, people don't quite know how this is going to go. You know, it's awkward. It's sort of weird. You have the black fans and the white fans in the same stadium. And Walter Payton's first game, they're playing Prentice High School. Second quarter, no score. Payton takes a handoff, runs 70 yards through the defense, and runs the last 20 yards, spins around and waves to the defenders, waves goodbye to them. And the fans go crazy, just go crazy, black fans, white fans. And Payton was the star who everyone could kind of rally around. And while it's sort of a cliche in sports, you know, the power of it bringing people together, blah, 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 it really did in that case. And his skill, coupled with his decency and the likability factor, how nice of a kid he was, worked wonders in that town that year.
We're talking with Jeff Pearlman. He has a wonderful book out. I hope you'll check it out. It's called Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. And usually a father is important in a young man's life, but in his case, it really brought tragic and heartbreak to him. Tell me what happened with his dad.
Right, well, when Payton was early in his career with Chicago, his father, Peter Payton, who was known to drink in Columbia, was known, he was a guy who liked his grape Mad Dog 2020, of all things, and would be known to buy a bottle, sit behind his house, get a little tipsy after work. Well, one day he's driving home, and he pulls into a convenience store, and he's kind of slurring his words. And then he drives off, and he gets in a little fender bender, and the police in Columbia take him in. They call his wife. His wife isn't there, so they take him in to the jail cell, to jail to sober up. That's what they say. And he's in the jail cell, and he has a massive brain aneurysm and dies. He wasn't drunk, actually. He was sick and dying. And, you know, they do the autopsy, and it's this very healthy man who just had this problem with his brain. And it devastated Walter Payton, and he was livid and angry and hurt and mad. And he was never one growing up to sort of point to race for much. You know, he was never one to blame race or to accuse people of racism. He was very open to whites. He had an incredibly big heart. But this really turned him off. And, you know, Columbia, Mississippi sort of stopped being a home for him. You know, he stopped viewing it the same way he did. When people would ask where he was from, he would say Jackson from that point on, which is where his mom moved to after her husband died. So, you know, it was a very, very dark moment in his life, the death of his father.
When he went off to college, what type of college career did he have?
Oh, awesome. I mean, he was going to go to Kansas State. He actually signed a letter of intent with Kansas State, which was the only Division I school to recruit him. And his brother, Eddie, his older brother, was a junior at Jackson State, Walter's senior year in high school. And Walter and Eddie, it's sort of a mixed relationship, close but competitive, you know, older brother, younger brother sort of thing. And he ends up going to Jackson State, and he plays for this coach there named Bob Hill, this hard-nosed disciplinarian, beat you down, you know, and Bob Hill really embraced Walter Payton. And, you know, Payton became this otherworldly phenom at Jackson State, just phenomenal. And some of his games, he ran against schools like Bishop College and University of Nebraska, Omaha, where he would just run past, over, through 7-8 defenders, cutting around, juking, weaving. I mean, Eddie Payton, his older brother, was a fantastic running back. And Walter Payton shows up and just sort of blows him away. And one little fact I love about his time at Jackson State, Walter's junior year at Jackson State, the coach recruits another halfback by the name of Wilbur Montgomery, who, of course, went on to be a Pro Bowl running back for the Philadelphia Eagles. And Bob Hill was going to start Wilbur Montgomery and Walter Payton in the backfield together. And Montgomery ended up transferring to Abilene Christian. But imagine a starting backfield of Walter Payton and Wilbur Montgomery in college. You'd be talking about the greatest backfield in the history of college football, and it would have been at Jackson State College.
We got about a minute left before we have to break. The reason why I posed the question the way I did is as you know, back when he was in college, the NFL did not necessarily give credit to players that played at small schools, not sure that they were able to play against the better talent at the big schools or in the National Football League. Did he suffer from that evaluation?
Oh, it made him angry. You know, you know, as I said in the book, he died. When he died, he was eulogized for 45 great years, and he was actually 46. When he was at Jackson State, he changed his age by a year. He made himself younger because he thought it would help him out to win the Heisman Trophy. He thought it would make him a more ideal candidate. He used to watch Archie Griffin at Ohio State, Anthony Davis at Southern Cal, and he would be livid. He knew he was better than those guys, and he was not getting the attention. And he really, really was sort of driven by these guys who are on the cover of Sports Illustrated who are getting all the press, and he was just a tiny Jackson State. And he came in 14th place in the Heisman voting, which is a joke considering how good he was.
Jeff Perlman is with us. I told you this is a great book, and we'll continue talking to Jeff about his years, the early years with the Chicago Bears. Sweetness is the name of the book. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline.